Previously on Vintage Lesbians.
I'm August. I use he or they pronouns.
I will say John Lawrence's biographer, George Massey, would not know compulsory heterosexuality if it came up and bit him on the face. Alexander literally showed John his penis. It's in the letters. It's canon. And this is an affirmation of his unalterable feelings for Hamilton. Show that, one, he was seeking confirmation Hamilton loved him, and then, two, that he wanted Hamilton to know that he loved him in return. And that's the last letter that he sent him, because then he dies a month later. How dare you besmirch his name like this with your heterosexuality?
Hello and welcome to Vintage Lesbians, a personal journey of friendship and queer history, where we try to set the record a little less straight. My name is Allison, and I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm your other host, Shan.
And this is Vintage Lesbians.
It sure is.
Okay, so, banter. Hey, dank haircut, dude.
Thanks, it feels nice. It is fuzzy. I like... You're purple?
Oh, I dyed my hair purple.
I see that. I feel like it also made the rest of your brown, like, richer.
Thank you.
It's nice. It looks really good, and I'm proud of you.
Oh, I like it, too. Thanks. Yesterday, when I went to karaoke with my pals, nobody noticed except for you. Because we were in a dark room, and there was, like,
there
colored
was blue
lights
lighting,
and stuff, but, like, so I don't hold it against them, but, like, it would have been nice, you know?
Yeah, I get you. I feel you. Yeah. So, anyway.
Anyway, you want to do a podcast?
I do. We have a guest today, a guest expert, if you will.
Wait, I have a thing.
What's your thing?
Okay, it's not very funny. I'm just going to lead with
that. Say it anyway.
So today we're going to be talking about JGL. Now you might be thinking, Allison, do you mean Joseph Gordon-Levitt? The hit American actor who starred in such acclaimed films as Angels in the Outfield and Nothing Else?
No, I don't think that, because Allison, he is neither vintage nor, to my knowledge, a lesbian.
Well, you would be wrong, Shan, because we're actually today we're going to talk about John Gay Lawrence.
Oh my God.
But Allison, you say, didn't we already talk about him? And I say,
we did almost a year ago to this day.
There's so much more that we could mine out of that particular mine.
And also that particular guest, you know him, you love him. He's a nice Jewish boy. August is back, everyone.
Yay!
I'm back.
August, how are you? Welcome to the banter.
Yes, thank you.
Have you changed any of your hairs recently?
I'm growing my hair out.
Nice.
It's green right now.
It sure is. You look like a sea witch who I want to give my soul to.
That's the idea.
I was thinking, like, forest nymph, who I also want to give my soul to.
Yeah, I feel like the takeaway is that we really just want to give our souls to you.
I mean, that's fair. I will accept that.
Anyway, should we do a podcast?
Because yes.
I need to go to a store later and buy some specific items.
And I need to go to a party. Well, it's more of a casual hang.
You need to go to a chill kickback?
I need to go to a chill kickback.
All right, well, let's get this podcast podcasted. August, please.
Probably watch some true crime and or play Assassin's Creed.
What if you did both at the same time? I'm talking two TVs, one atop the other.
Good Lord. Listen to a true crime podcast while playing Assassin's Creed.
I have done that.
That tracks. That's very you.
So I didn't do any research on John Lawrence. And I meant to re-listen to our old episode so that I could reference it, and then I did not do that.
I also did not do that.
I listened to it on my bus ride home.
You're an angel.
And I also pulled up I have about a dozen tabs open from my favorite John Lawrence blog, which is literally john-lawrence@tumblr.com, which surprisingly is not run by me.
That is actually very surprising.
I thought for sure that this was a secret alter ego of yours.
No, not quite. But last time we talked a lot, just like a general overview of John Lawrence's life and mostly how he knew and probably had some, you know, hot blowies in some tents with Alexander Hamilton.
Yep.
But this time we're going to stay back in time a little bit to John Lawrence's days in Geneva in England, where he had I call him John's ex-boyfriend, Francis Kinloch.
Okay.
Yeah. I need to know everything about this. This is so good.
So it's pretty funny, the relationship between these two, because they had extremely different political views. So, because John was a pretty staunch patriot.
Mm-hmm.
He sure was. Doing this, you know, the patriot stuff.
Yeah, he was gay for Alexander Hamilton, and he was gay for his country.
Yes, it's true. And so gay for this country that he was injured in literally every major battle he fought in.
Oh, I feel like after the second one, you should stop.
Well, he didn't. He had what Jenna Marbles calls the too much gene.
Yeah, fair. And
was too much.
That tracks.
Boy was horny for freedom.
And fighting.
Yeah, he did prefer to use a sword over a musket, so that's pretty gay.
She's
the aesthetic.
He's a sword gay.
While you were busy being heterosexual, I studied the blade.
So the Francis was I don't know enough about colonial history to be like so, but he was like he was not a separatist. He was. America should be part of England.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we could be like Canada now.
King's rule, taxes, all that. Mm-hmm. Governor general.
Francis's Wikipedia lists him as a lawyer and a rice planter, which is also what Henry Lawrence's, John's father's Wikipedia page lists him as. So that just means he owned a lot of slaves.
Yeah.
So he was born in March of 1755, so that puts him, I think, a couple years older than John. And he served on the Continental Congress in 1780, so that's how he relates back to the country as well. So they met in Geneva, where John was being schooled. And they may have met earlier because they were both born in South Carolina. And Henry Lawrence's papers have, like, they have a few casual mentions of their family, probably because they were both pretty big slave traders. But John was, like, I don't know. They were, like, the Lawrence family was ridiculously, just absolutely fuck huge wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and there's also a very cute... a little tidbit of Francis's sister, Mary Esther, made John a pair of ruffles as a going away present before he sailed to Europe.
Oh, that's nice.
That's so sweet.
What are what is a pair of ruffles?
Probably like ruffles for the arms, for your sleeves.
For the neck?
I'm pretty sure they were for the sleeves. Neither one of my historical costuming expert friends roommates are home right now, so I do not have a good answer for that.
That's fair.
I recently learned what a jabot is. I might be pronouncing it wrong. It's a lacy collar. Jabot.
Okay.
Jab. J-A-B-O-T.
Good.
I was thinking of being adamant for Halloween. I wasn't, but if I was, I would have needed a lacy collar. A jabot.
Every time I hear the word schooled, immediately think, oh, okay, so they were beaten in a video game. And it takes me a minute to go, oh no, that means educated. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah, they were both studying law in Geneva, I believe, because John's father, Henry, really, really wanted him to be a lawyer. And yeah. Since John was the firstborn and Henry was like, doing the classic, like, I might stop loving you if you don't become a lawyer. Which is, really super cool. But anyway, since Mary Esther made John a very cute pair of ruffles, which if they're lace, that, because nice ruffles are made of lace, I would assume.
Yeah.
And lace is a lot of work.
It sure is.
But since John knew Mary Esther at that time, he likely knew Francis as well.
Yeah.
But John did arrive in Geneva in 1772, and Kinloch arrived in early 1774. So John was there for a couple years beforehand. And
he was like a junior. And Kinloch was like a freshman.
Like a junior and a freshman flirting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except that Kinloch, I think, is older, but you know.
So they're like the same-ish age, but like one has more experience with the school and one has more experience with the world.
Oh no, John was a year older. My bad.
I looked up ruffles and I'm just getting stuff about the potato chips. I will continue to look as we continue to talk. Thank you.
Try looking for ruffs.
Ruffs. It's a type of bird. Sorry. But a wrist ruff. Those are for the wrists, baby.
Oh my goodness.
We did it.
We're doing so great.
So yes, Henry mentioned Kinloch was going to be coming to Geneva when he wrote John a letter in January 1774. So not, you know, obviously not like trying to set his son up because this was the 1770s. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, oh, look, another South Carolinian friend is coming to Geneva also. And John was like, cool, I'm gay.
Nice.
Perhaps they were childhood sweethearts. Before they really had the knowledge that that could even be a thing or the vocabulary to talk about it. Maybe, like, they were out riding. I don't know what they did back in those days. Frolicking, I was going to say baling hay, and then I was like, no. Nah. Perhaps they were playing hoop and stick, and their hands touched. They reached for the same hoop at the same time, and they blushed.
Or they just did, you know, normal childhood experimentation with, like, kissing and touching and then were like, oh, but also the kisses make me tingle.
Hey, bro, I'm really scared about kissing a girl for the first time, for I never have before. Maybe we should kiss as practice.
Fellas, is it gay if we fall in love?
Fellas, folks.
So John Lawrence got this letter. He immediately got a haircut and, like, got out his fancy lace ruffles that his future sister-in-law, wink, would make him already. Got himself spruced up, and he met... Okay, I know his name isn't Thomas Kincaid, but that's the only thing that's come into my head. Can you remind me what his... Francis. Francis Kincaid. No.
Kinloch.
You know what? Thomas Kincaid, Francis Kinloch. I'm on board with me.
I can see where you would cross it. Yeah. So what happens next?
Yes, tell us more. Did he have a car?
I mean, I'm sure he had several horses.
Did he get very far, huh?
Yeah.
He had a 2-horsepower cart. So stupid.
Shan is so happy right now. I've never seen you look so smug.
Henry wanted John to move to England to begin studying law in later 1774, but John wanted to stay in Geneva for another year. I wonder why.
To study Francis?
Probably, yeah.
He could have just said that he was, you know, majoring in France studies.
The minor in anatomy. That's a joke about bodies.
Hey, but I'm ch.
Yeah, so we can only really speculate on how much of a role Francis would have played in John's desire to remain in Geneva. But, you know, but yeah. Daddy, I love him.
Let's create this world together.
A world in which they are college sweetheart.
It's not like we are just making this up without any evidence. As I understand it, there are some very compelling letters that might show that they did maybe have some love for one another.
Oh, that's a perfect transition because I was about to read a passage from a letter.
Yay.
All right. So
I'm excited.
Upon his arrival in London, Lawrence wrote Kinloch about wanting to go back to Geneva. And I think I'm pretty sure this is one of the earliest letters we have between the two. So a significant passage. And this is still, like, you know, language of the time. And there's weird capitalization. So I'm doing my best.
Of course.
If my letter is a little confused, don't be surprised at it, for I am quite like a creature in a new world and shall be for some time in an unsettled state. I'm glad, however, to inform you that I shall not have lodgings in the temple as I first thought, but in some genteel private family. The noise, the cries, the smoke and dust of this vast city make me sometimes wish myself back at Paki. Repeating from last episode on John, I don't speak French. I have another reason, too, for wishing myself there. I don't know when I shall get into such a valuable set of acquaintance as I have left, but perhaps for the present, the fewer acquaintance I have, the better it will be for me. I am confirmed in the opinion that you and I both had at Geneve, respecting our young countrymen by what I have seen and heard since my arrival here. And then the letter closes. There's going to be more French in here. Genevoise, maybe? I don't know. I'll figure it out when I get there. It grows late. It grows so late that I must bid you adieu. Kiss all the pretty Genevoises for me, and don't delay to write your affectionate John Lawrence.
Aww. That was pretty gay.
It's a sweet letter, yeah.
Folks, that's gay.
Pretty gay is the thing.
Sometimes, you know how you platonically will write your also straight friend, like, hey,
hey, it's pretty cool here, but man, I wish I was, you know where you are? It's great where you are. For some reason, I just miss it a lot.
I'll make your acquaintance, wink.
Anyway, I'm affectionate at you. Bye.
I'll respect your good country, man. Is that anything?
Yeah, it's something.
Still pretty romantic. If a girl said that to me, my heart would flutter.
My heart did flutter a little.
Does it get any gayer than that? Or is that pretty much, like, it's already pretty gay?
Yeah, this letter that John writes, because remember, we don't have a ton of John's return letters to Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
But this letter mirrors some of his later letters to Hamilton. Because, spoiler alert, Lawrence and Kinloch have a pretty big falling out over their very opposite political views.
Oh, no.
That checks out.
And Lawrence seems to have been significantly upset about the loss of his buddy, Kinloch. And these sentiments pretty closely mirror what Lawrence writes to Hamilton on, what's the letter date? July 14th, 1779. Turnant will relate to you how many violent struggles I have had between duty and inclination, how much my heart was with you while I appeared to be most actively employed here.
My heart is with you?
Yeah.
Folks, that's gay.
You can really see the sorrow of, like, trying to wrap your head around, like, I'm in love with this person, but also they are against everything I stand for, and thus I am going to cut ties.
Yeah. Man, you're really picking up on where I'm going here, because I'm about to talk about the falling out.
You're weaving us a tale. We're just following along.
Yeah. Also, maybe Allison and I just share one single brain cell.
I think that's probably it.
You do seem to have synergy.
Have you ever seen us in the same room together? That's because we're the same person. Oh, yeah.
Most of their correspondence between, like, April and September of 1776 are mostly, like, political debates, because Lawrence, as we have talked about, was very gay for patriotism, and Kinloch was a loyalist, and so they would debate on monarchy and republicanism, which I'm not going to get into because we're focusing on the gay shit, but some parts of these letters do reveal their feelings for each other. And let me see. So an interesting crossing of the streams, as it were, is the timeline of these debates is pretty aligned with the timeline of Lawrence's relationship with Martha Manning, which, as we talked about in the last episode, Martha Manning was John's wife, who he married in what he referred to as a pity wedding, because, as we know, he was very gay, but he did knock her up.
Yeah.
And married her to protect both of their family names.
Yeah, because he's a nice gay man.
Yeah.
In a time when you weren't allowed to be gay.
Yeah, or you'd be probably hung, and not in the good way.
Or you have to go to the church, and if you're the firstborn son, you don't really have that option.
Mm-hmm.
So fight it is. Mm-hmm. Horny for fighting.
And, you know, he's going to have to get married to someone. He knew that going in.
Yeah, so may as well do it with someone who would, like, not
conveniently never have to see again because he immediately fucks off to America while she's pregnant and then dies.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which also, like, not great, but what are you going to do?
I don't think he planned to die, but he did fuck off to America. That definitely was planned.
Given his strategy, quote unquote, of fighting and getting injured every time, I feel like he probably did. But that's another depressing episode.
Yeah, I mean, better to be slain in battle than your father's most disappointing son, because you never had children or got married.
Most of what I know about Alexander Hamilton, I learned from the hit musical Hamilton.
Same.
And so I gather that he was hungry for a heroic death, and it makes sense that if John Lawrence was also kind of hungry for a heroic death, they would probably feed off of that, not really think of the consequences of, like, dying young.
Yeah. I kind of think of it like maybe that was his plan, was to, like, get married, die in battle, so that he didn't have to continue being a disappointment, or he didn't have to continue failing to live up to expectations that he couldn't live up to.
And they both seem like sweeping, like, romantics, capital R romantics, and, like, you know,
grand gestures and heroic deaths, and isn't it romantic, and I forgot about the blood, oh god, the blood, oh god, oh god, that sort of thing.
Getting shot is so much less glamorous than I thought it would be.
Exactly.
I did get to see the hit musical Hamilton when it was in Albany back in August, and it...
Hey, that's your name. Sorry. That was so dumb. Please continue.
I did meet the actor who mainly plays John Lawrence and Philip Hamilton, and showed him my John Lawrence doll, and he was extremely sweet. His name is also John, which makes it very easy.
Nice.
That's delightful. Oh, I love when they're sweet. I love that.
And I did tell him about the podcast.
Nice.
Because I am a Capricorn moon and I cannot be stopped.
Look, I'm not trying to stop you. I'm not trying to stop you. Don't let me stop you.
I'm a Capricorn moon and I try to shoehorn my podcast in sometimes. Not all the time.
But sometimes. When it's relevant.
Like if I think someone might be gay, but I'm not sure. Maybe I'll drop the fact that I have a queer history podcast and there's an episode I think you'd be interested in. You know?
Love that shit. Do you have more information for us? I'm hungry for facts.
I do.
Yee.
We haven't even gotten into their messy breakup yet.
That's probably the gayest part.
Okay, so Lawrence wrote to Kinloch on April 12th of 1776. And the letter opens with, "My dear Kinloch," which is not... like, overly affectionate, but also echoes how he will address Hamilton in the future, which is cute. The fact that Lawrence is even writing to Kinloch is pretty huge in of itself, because he didn't write to many people and would often, like, accidentally ghost people and fail to write back or take a long time to do so, because, as we've kind of discussed, he was a depressed gay bitch and, you know, same.
Accidental ghostings is just the most relatable thing I've heard about this young man so far.
Accidental ghosting is the name of my new emo band. We just sing about how we forget to text people back, not because we don't like you, but because we're depressed and or we have ADHD.
So the majority of Lawrence's surviving correspondence is to his dad. So, but outside of Henry, some of the only people Lawrence wrote to more like personal stuff, so not military stuff, basically, would be Hamilton and Kinloch. So kind of not even his wife, but we've touched on that a little.
Well, it sounds like he didn't really have a strong personal relationship with her.
Yeah, they seem just like, well, this is convenient. You need a husband, and I need a wife who doesn't really want a husband.
You don't want to get married. I don't want to get married. It's the 1700s.
Let's get married.
Romantic. Oh. What if Martha was also gay? I know that we can't know that. And based, I don't know. But like, what if?
What if everyone
what if she had
has
a
been gay
secret girlfriend?
From the beginning of time? And we've all just been pretending.
Mm-hmm. And she's
I mean,
like,
I think that sounds more correct.
She could have like a little secret girlfriend somewhere and then like... oh, man, I'm widowed, You know, I'm just so heartbroken.
Oh no, I'm just going to move in with my friend to raise these children.
She's also conveniently widowed.
Oh no, I'm just
going
to hire my longtime friend as these as my children's governess.
We'll raise them together like a couple of straights.
Yeah, you know, like the straights do.
More letters, please. Thank you.
I'm listening. We are here. I'm so sorry.
All right. In the last paragraph of the letter that Lawrence wrote, he says, "You and I may differ, my dear Kinloch, in our political sentiments, but I shall always love you from the knowledge I have of your heart." So that wonderful gay statement is one of the most affectionate things that Lawrence ever wrote. The closest parallel we have is in a letter from Lawrence to Hamilton, which is "My love as usual." And even that kind of falls short of "I shall always love you from the knowledge I have of your heart." Like, put that on a fucking sampler and hang it in my kitchen.
I want to, I want to work that into my vows.
Yeah, right? Right?
As big, ardently admire you energy.
Yeah.
That was a Pride and Prejudice reference.
Yeah.
I know books.
I've also read books, but I haven't read that one.
I actually haven't read it either.
But I know a lot about it because of, you know, media. Anyway, August, this is your episode.
I'm having fun. I have not gotten to talk about this really before.
I'm also having fun.
I would like to throw to the fun having because I'm there too.
You ready to hear Kinloch's breakup letter?
Oh gosh, yes, but no.
Ruin me. Let's do this.
All right. So it's a letter from about, I can count, like 2.5 weeks later, April 28th, 1776. The opening from Kinloch to Lawrence is, like, relatively affectionate. It goes, "If I knew how to thank you for your letter, I would do it, but as the case is, you must be satisfied, my dear Lawrence, with my telling you that it gave me the highest pleasure. Continue to write me whatever Carolina news you can pick up that you can think capable of interesting a Carolinian. And one, too, that loves his native country, whatever may be your idea of my manner of thinking in political affairs. Don't let that hinder you from telling me yours, and I promise to be as free with you. We hold too fast by one another's hearts, my dear Lawrence, to be afraid of exposing our several opinions to each other." Mm. But the closing is kind of what makes it read like a breakup. Mm-hmm. Kinloch closes with, "If you see anyone I know among the Carolinians of your acquaintance present my compliments. I would not be thought to have forget them or my country. Be certain that I never shall forget you," comparing Lawrence's "I shall always love you" to Kinloch's "I shall never forget you," mm-hmm. seems to reveal kind of contrasting emotions that they were feeling.
Yeah.
Kinloch might be like feeling ready to move on. And the date of this letter may also reveal some reasoning behind Lawrence's decision to knock up Martha Manning, more or less. Because the letter is dated April 28th, 1776, and 9 months after this, Frances Lawrence would be born. We don't have a known definitive date for her birth. We only know that she was born in mid to late January of 1777.
And what was her name again?
Frances Lawrence.
That name is the same as the name of his ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, so actually, Shan, that is very interesting because that is another thing I was going to bring up. See, we're all in sync here. We're all in sync. We all share one gay brain cell. So even accounting for, like, transit time, Lawrence probably would have received that letter in early May. The timing still fits. And the fact that Francis's approximate conception date perfectly coincides with a breakup letter may suggest like a little bit of rebound happening.
That's so funny.
And then to name the child after the breakup person.
Yeah.
The ex, it's yeah.
The ex. I call them breakup people.
The breakup person.
Oh, that person, yeah, they used to be one of my breakup people, so,
oh
like...
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Please
so
continue.
Silly.
We have John's response also.
I'm ready for this.
Cut's so excited to hit my glasses on my microphone.
Are you okay? Are you hurt?
No.
Okay, good.
I mean, I'm fine. I'm not hurt.
What about emotionally?
I'm always a little emotionally hurt, but that's my own issue.
Yeah, it's fair.
aren't you a Pisces?
I'm a Pisces. I cry a lot. On the Enneagram, I'm a 4. I love emotions.
On June 16th, 1776, we have a roast. In this letter, we see Lawrence's kind of classic response to learning that his lover has other romantic interests, which is jealousy and being super passive aggressive because he also was a Scorpio. So instead of opening with a "my dear Kinlock," Lawrence simply jumps right into the letter with these opening sentences. "My ambition, Kinlock, is to live under a republican government. I hate the name of the king, but this is returning you opinion for opinion. Now let us examine the reasons upon which sentiments thus diametrically opposite are founded." So not only does he not address Kinlock, he opens by unabashedly rejecting and like tearing down his, I guess, his ex-boyfriend's political opinions. Mm-hmm. And while, like I mentioned before, while this political discourse and the debates had been going on for a while, it had been conducted in a much less confrontational way.
Yeah, more like, more subtle, or...
More of like an artful political debate other than, I hate the name of the king.
Yeah. That's not subtle at all, is the thing.
No, John Lawrence was not known for being subtle. And neither am I.
I love a Scorpio.
So one of my favorite lines from the letter is, "If you please, every infamous germ that can disgrace humanity is most luxuriantly developed in your admired form of government."
Oh, man. That's amazing. That's beautiful. I want that on a sampler.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you really, I don't have time or like the mental energy or like, I guess the reading comprehension to read the whole letter, but it is a fucking delight and you should go read it.
Would you mind sending us a link so that we can put the link up on the blog?
Oh, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. The letter closes. Lawrence closes with, "Adieu, present my compliments to any inquiring friend. Greet Vegobre," which is one of their colleagues, "greet Vegobre kindly in my name, and believe to me as sincerely as a Republican can be to a royalist, your friend John Lawrence."
Oh my goodness.
So, and they're, I don't know, watching the closings of John's letters to, I mean, not just to Kinlock, to Hamilton as well, but the way that you close out a letter says a lot. And the downfall of their relationship is very clear because he moved from "your affectionate John Lawrence" to "adieu" to essentially "you are dead to me, fuck you."
Yeah. Yeah, harsh.
I have not found Kinlock's response to this, so
it's a mystery.
Yeah, so unfortunately we do not have that.
It had big Elizabeth Bennet, "I will never marry you" speech energy.
Yeah, it did.
We should make a Pride and Prejudice style movie about their whole romance.
If I had any interest in making movies, I would be right on top of that. I want to watch you make the movie.
I don't know how to make the movie.
I don't know either. How are you proposing we do this?
I just thought we would just put it out into the ether, the internet, and then people who know how to do it will do it. And then they'll be like, "Hey, great idea, Allison and Shan. Yeah. Here's a lot of money."
That sounds good. Is that about do it for your info today?
Not quite. I'm
a delighted gasp. A delighted gasp.
I'm not totally sure of the date of this, unfortunately, but this is from our old pal Gregory Massey, John's biographer, who
I remember
is a homophobe and a coward.
Yep.
But it illustrates that even, I believe, you know, years later, at least a couple years later, when they were both back in the United States, probably in around 1780 or so, because that's when Kinlock was appointed to Congress. So this is a quote from Massey's biography of Lawrence. Shortly after his arrival at headquarters in early September, John met his old friend Francis Kinloch, who had recently returned from England. Lawrence could not forget how he and Kinloch had debated the merits of republicanism and constitutional monarchy. Remembering Kinloch's earlier opposition to the revolutionary cause, he viewed with skepticism his friend's change of heart. "I'm sorry that Kinloch did not return to America sooner," he told Henry, his father. "His former sentiments on the present contest give reason to suspect, if he is a convert, that success on our side has alone operated the change." So, still bitter.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely relatable. I am also continuously bitter about many things.
Yeah, people should just agree with me from the beginning. Like, thanks for coming around, but I'm still mad about the time that you didn't agree with me and acknowledge that I was right, so I'm going to hold it over your head for a minute.
We do have some evidence of Lawrence, like, trying to rekindle a little bit, or at least not be so confrontational in later September 1776. So it took, you know, a few months and one pregnant soon-to-be fiancé, but he cooled down a little bit. The letter once again opens with, "My dear Kinloch," and Lawrence goes on to apologize a little bit for his more aggressive accusations. Saying, "I have long been indebted to you a letter, which I am the more sorry for, as there seems to be an explanation wanting on my part of some things in the letter which gave rise to your last. I have no copies of what I write, and therefore can't be exactly sure of all the expressions which I used in my letter." Oh no, I don't have the letter. I don't know exactly what I said, but I'm sure it's fine.
I'm super sorry about it. But I can't apologize specifically because I just don't remember that I said I hated the name of the king.
Was it even me? Like, what, are you sure that was my letter?
I wrote the letter. That was my other look. I was really tired that day, and I got so frustrated, and I carried the letter to the post office before I could think.
You know, I didn't even want to write the letter. Someone made. But seriously, though, fuck the king. Love, John. That's the end. Mm-hmm.
So apparently, I guess despite their breakup, more or less, Lawrence seems to, like, sincerely wish to remain friends and says, "It was from the great opinion I had of your heart that I first wished to form a friendship with you. It is from the great opinion that I still have of it that I am exceedingly desirous of cultivating and improving that friendship." He wants him back real bad.
I just want to hang out with you again. What? Just take me back. What did I do wrong?
And they agree to disagree and realize that they likely will never be able to compromise on their political opinions. And says, this is still from the same letter, by the way, says, "I still think your political principles are wrong. The sentiments which you have adopted with your respect to your own country strike me with horror, and I hope you'll change them. But I'm persuaded you think they are right, and your heart with me is unimpeached." He even goes on to congratulate Kinloch on apparently a new girlfriend. This is literally the only reference we have to this mysterious young lady. But Lawrence goes on in the same letter to congratulate Kinloch.
It's a long ass letter. It's
like, it is a long letter.
Ramble texting your ex.
Probably had his friends read it first.
Is it okay to send this? I can't really edit it because it's all written down on paper. But do you think it's good? Should I burn it?
Should I say, like, hello, or should I say hey? Is hey too casual?
Like, should I say, like, my dear or my friend?
Should I still say fuck the king?
Yeah, fuck the king.
Your political principles are wrong. But yes, he congratulates Kinloch on a new girlfriend, saying, "You seem to be in such high spirits at writing the name of fair Miss Stevens that I have a notion there is a liaison de coeur in question. And I know that coeur means heart, but that's about all I know."
Liaison means meeting.
It does. Meeting of the hearts.
Ooh.
That's what that phrase means.
"If so, I congratulate you both with all my heart. I have not seen her a great while, but shall see her with more pleasure than ever if she is to be yours."
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe they're just pals. And he's like, "Who's Miss Stevens, huh?
I just really want you to be happy, my pal, with this person. I'm just, like, so happy about your happiness. It brings me joy.
I want to meet her. Also, are you seeing each other? Like, is this actually
is this,
a,
like,
liaison
an open
de coeur
thing? Or like,
you really dating, or is this just a friendship thing?
I mean, I could get into this on an entire other episode of the podcast on romantic friendships and the notion of romantic friendships, but it was, like, generally seen very positively for men to have romantic friendships going into marriage, because it shows that they have, like, the capacity to have a steady relationship.
I was going to just give some dating advice, and I realized I've never really dated a straight man or had anything to do with any straight men. So I was going to say, like, well, yeah, you don't want to end up with, like, a man who doesn't have any, like, close personal friends. And
no,
then
you
I
really
was like,
don't.
Yeah, you don't.
That is extremely good dating advice. Like, do not date people if they do not have a few friends that they can call, like, their close friends.
Mm-hmm. If they've never unironically said, you're the family I've chosen, and then hated themselves a little bit for it, because it's so cliche.
I've never hated myself for saying that.
Me neither.
I never have either.
Chosen family is everything.
It is everything. It's good. What were we talking about?
I was going to talk about how sad it was to read this letter, knowing that John Lawrence and Martha Manning were currently trying to, like, hide her pregnancy and or figure out the best way out of the situation, which ended up being marriage. Because Lawrence doesn't mention his own, like, girlfriend in the letter. Probably for the best, considering he got Martha pregnant out of wedlock and it would have destroyed her reputation.
Yep.
But it's, you know, hard to read Lawrence forcing himself to be happy like that, because that sucks. And so Lawrence ends with kind of more or less two closings, one at the end of the body of the letter and one in, like, a little P.S. So he writes, the first one is, beware of Italy, my friend, and believe me to be yours as sincerely, John Lawrence. I don't know why we're bewaring of Italy, because I don't
have
a whole letter.
It's just good advice.
Just beware. Just in general, beware.
I'm not sure what Italy was up to at the time, so I apologize to Italians.
Were they up to fascism then?
No, I think they were pre-fascism still. When did Italy reunify?
I don't remember. It doesn't matter right now. We had this conversation last time. We can't do it again.
I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it.
Yes, you are. Your phone is in your hands.
No, it's
August,
not.
Please help us end the episode.
No, I found why. Kinloch was leaving for Italy around this time. But I don't really know why he says beware.
Maybe it just means be safe in Italy.
As we all know, Italy unified in 1815.
Good Lord, Allison.
I just remember that from
you
my
just
middle school.
From the last episode?
From my middle school
from the last
social
John
studies
Lawrence
class, yeah.
Where we spent 15 minutes figuring out
what I don't know why we spent 15 minutes, because it was very easy for me to find it right now.
Because they've reunified a couple times.
Italy, 1776.
Anyway, what's up?
The little P.S. he writes is, present my best respects to our countrywoman and believe me, yours, J.L. The countrywoman in question is Kinloch's girlfriend, Miss Stevens. And the closing is much friendlier and more affectionate, obviously, than the last one, because it doesn't literally end with, like, fuck you in so many words. He seems to kind of accepted that Kinloch has moved on at this point. And he also has other things to worry about. Like the fact that he knocked someone up out of wedlock in the 1770s.
Yeah, that's not good.
So do you want to talk about John's daughter, Frances, in the last 5 minutes?
Yeah. Tell me more about this Frances Lawrence, you say.
Lawrence's daughter was named Frances with an E, this female spelling of Frances with an I. And no one in the Manning or Lawrence families was named Frances or Frances, which was a pretty big naming convention at the time, which, like, you know, as a Jew, we don't name children after people who are already alive. Because then, like, the angel of death can get confused and they might kill the baby instead of the old person, blah, blah, blah. I think it's mostly an Ashkenazi superstition, but anyway, the fact that she was not named after anyone in either of their immediate families, but is named Frances, it's possible. It's not totally discounted that she could be named after Frances, Frances Kinloch, but on the other hand, Lawrence was not present at Frances's birth because he was, you know, being a soldier. So I don't know how much of a role he would have played in naming her.
Well, they may have talked about it and said, like, he may have said, if it's a boy, Frances, and if it's a girl, Frances.
Maybe. There was a fairly well-known female author at the time called Frances Burney. So she may have been named after her, but even so, that her middle name is Eleanor, or was Eleanor, which is the name of Lawrence's mother, who died when he was, I think, 16. which he did not handle very well, but that's another episode about Lawrence's emotional turmoil. So regardless of her namesake, we are left basically with two scenarios, one being that Lawrence rebounded with Martha Manning after breaking up with Kinlock and then named the child that resulted from said one night stand after Kinlock, which is, you know, fucking most power Scorpio move if I've ever seen one. Second scenario is that Lawrence did not name his daughter, but at some point received a letter which informed him that his child was given the female version of his ex-boyfriend's name. And both kind of suck.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
I hope it's the first one, though, because I feel like that one sucks a little less. Because, like, it's not like he intentionally knocked up Martha, probably. He probably had, like, a one-night stand, and then he was like, ah, shit, well, I guess I gotta deal with this, and I'm not gonna be a deadbeat dad, except for literally.
Yep. Poor little baby.
Anyway, I hope she's doing well.
She died over 5 years ago. It's fine. I'm not wrong.
I hate that number, though.
You're definitely not wrong. So, I mean, that's more or less, like, they would have crossed paths, or they, not they would have, they could have, may have crossed paths at several points during the war, but there isn't really any correspondence that I've been able to find after 1776. Kinlock died in 1826, which is almost 44 years after Lawrence, because Lawrence died, he's part of the 27 Club and died at 27, tragically. But he wrote a incredibly heartfelt obituary for John, which, you know, get ready for sad times again. Woo woo.
Ready.
So the obituary closes. I can also link the obituary for you guys. It closes with, "It will be unnecessary to anticipate the grateful emotions which must arise in the breast of every virtuous citizen in favor of this illustrious young man, whose untimely death we all have reason to lament. And while I join the public opinion in admiring his disinterested zeal for the rights of mankind, his great and unwearied services to this country, his gallantry in the field, and his ability and address in negotiation, together with those more domestic virtues which distinguish him in the characters of the companion, the husband, and the son, and endear him to the bosom of private life, I am happy thus to perform my last duties to the memory of a friend." Mm-hmm. We really don't, and I guess, like, you know, fun sad note to end on, is we really don't know what their relationship was like in those last 5 years of between 1777 and 1782. Is that 5 years? It is 5 years. I did the math right.
Mm-hmm. Crushed it.
Because they went through that, like, pretty nasty political fallout breakup. But I guess maybe when Kinlock returned to South Carolina, he changed his mind. Maybe Lawrence was able to convince him when they were both back in the States.
I hope they were friends after.
So Kinlock did move back to America?
Yes. He moved back to America in 1778-ish. Around that point, that year.
Did he fight for either side in the war?
He did switch sides in the war. They fought in some of the same battles, and they represented the same parishes as members of the House of Reps for South Carolina, but we don't really have any of their writing. So it's hard to piece together the progress of that repairing of their relationship.
Yeah.
When they fought together, did they ever, like, accidentally find themselves, like, in the same foxhole or something? I don't know if there are foxholes in the Revolutionary War, but, like, just go with me here. And then, like, have their eyes meet and then, like, have a tense sort of, like, relationship, like, moment where they're, like, talking and they're, like, "I'm really mad at you, but I hope you don't die." And, like, it's the same kind of thing. And then maybe they kiss really quick.
I mean, I would definitely put that in the TV show.
Okay. Good. Yes.
Going in the movie.
Yeah, it's going in the movie.
Thank you so much for teaching us today and for staying up late and stuff, and
I forgot it was late there. Oh my goodness,
we appreciate you a lot. Do you want to plug anything?
I know, I appreciate you guys a lot. I mean, it's only 9:30 here, so the night's still young for me. I'm gonna, like, take a bath or something.
Nice. You gonna put any bath bombs in there?
Gonna get some good smells.
You can get any bubble bars,
any oils?
Yeah, I have all of those.
What color's your bath water going to be?
No, stop.
We can't do a bath consult now. I'm not on the clock.
Do you want to tell our listeners what you smell like?
Do you want to tell our listeners what your Twitter is?
Yeah, my Twitter is @thatqueerbird. That's also my Instagram. And yeah, I mostly just yell about being gay.
Yeah, it's great. That's why we're friends.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to do more like early American history, queer stuff. I have a couple other ideas, but I won't, cannot disclose it because it's not real yet.
Well, if any of them become real and you want a free advertising spot, let us know.
Yep. That's going to do it for us here at Vintage Lesbians.
Before we go, I want to thank our good friend Leslie for our logo design. Leslie is a treasure. Leslie is very sweet. Leslie has two packages in my bedroom that I need to give her.
Leslie is all of those things and does have those things. I would like to ask that you rate and review us on iTunes. Maybe subscribe, tell a friend about us, tweet about us. or you can support us on Patreon for $7 a month at patreon.com/vintagelespod. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. All of that is at vintagelespod. And our email is vintagelespod@gmail.com. That's vintage, LESPOD.
You can also follow us on our personal social media if you would like. I am at Allison Humphreys.
I am at justashan_.
Or you can follow us on CoStar. I'm at Allison Was Here. Shan is at Just Shan. And you can see if we are, destined to be
compatible.
Soulmates based on the position of the stars. Thank you so much for listening. We love you.
We love you.
Oh, we love you.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Vintage Lesbians with August. Ba-da-ba-da.